This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
This is DCR.
There's going to be two fighters now at the center of the ring just wailing on each other the rest of the way.
One of the great performances that we have ever seen.
Three ball, Durant, good from up top.
Historic performance. He played the entire game. He barely missed.
I was just trying to win each possession.
One of the best scorers to ever play the game.
48 minutes, he scores 49 points.
Durant again! This time off the right angle, a deep three.
Let me do what I need to do each possession. That's the approach I always take.
That's what you're expecting from an all-time performer.
And the Brooklyn Nets come back from down 17 to win by 6 and take a 3-2 lead in this best-of-7 series.
This is DCR.
I'm Kevin Durant. Y'all know who I am.
On 98.7 ESPN.
That was something. That was some performance. DCR is the show, 98.7 ESPN. Time now for a little Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. So we'll get to the Mets and the Yankees and the Islanders in a little bit. Stump Rothenberg coming your way at 6:45. A lot of calls on the Nets. A lot of calls on that performance. A lot of calls on that collapse from Milwaukee. I mean, if you're a Bucks fan, you got to be sitting there in your home last night thinking, we're up 17, no Kyrie. A clearly compromised James Harden. Joe Harris looks awful. The only thing that can take us down is Kevin Durant. Now, listen, Jeff Green was great as well. But if Durant doesn't do that, that's a non-competitive game. And Durant lifts the level of his game to heights that maybe we've never seen from him in the biggest moment last night.
Yeah, Dave, here's what I don't understand. Like, if you're the Bucks after the first quarter and seeing what James Harden was, or more importantly, what he wasn't, why in the hell would you let Kevin Durant beat you by himself? Like, why would you do, like, what? I just don't understand why they didn't force somebody else to beat him, why they wouldn't force somebody else to get the ball. Like, I mean, you throw double teams at Kevin Durant, you trap Kevin Durant, you force him to give the ball up and see if one of those other guys can beat you. The fact that they didn't do that last night, that's probably going to be what cost Coach Bud his job. If you're a Bucks fan right now, you're looking around the NBA and seeing who you want as your next head coach. Because if Milwaukee can't find a way to rally, and I strongly doubt that they will, the Bucks are going to move on from Budenholzer. There's no way he can survive this.
Well, I mean, because they can't. I mean, they're not going to move on from Giannis. Like, I mean, they've
just locked him into a contract. Yeah, that's done.
I mean, I think that's part of the problem too. Is like, I mean, especially late in games. Like we saw. Like, I mean, late in games. I mean, the person that's probably more likely to close out a game for you, especially because you feel better about him hitting his free throws too, is Chris Middleton. Like, we've already seen that in the series, right? Like, Giannis, I mean, the free throw shooting is not great. I mean, he can't shoot. Like, there are a lot of things wrong with Giannis offensively.
Yes.
And it feels like the coach, and more importantly, his teammates, defer to Giannis. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, we know what we should do, but, you know, Giannis is the guy, so we're going to kind of defer to him and let him do what he does. And that's not necessarily in their best interest. And I asked you guys this before the show. I mean, how many guys, like how many big men that can't shoot that play the way Giannis plays have won championships without another, and not a Chris Middleton or a Drew Holiday? Like,
yeah,
another
Chris Middleton. Can we stop with the Chris Middleton talk too? Like, oh, he's an all-star. Yeah, he's a fringe all-star, but Chris Middleton leaves a lot to be desired.
He's not a number two.
Especially in these types of moments. Like, if Chris Middleton is your third option, okay, great. But when he's your number two, like, you saw it, man. The shot selection from Chris Middleton in the second half was absolutely ridiculous, man. I just got tired of it because it left the door open for the Nets to have this comeback. And like Rick always says, he wants to be right. Damn it, I wanted to be right yesterday with my prediction that the Bucks would win. And after two quarters, I was just like, yeah, you know what? I feel pretty good about it. Up 17 in the third, I feel pretty good about it. And then all of a sudden, there's a lid on the basket. Those guys aren't aggressive in terms of trying to get easy buckets in the paint. And then Kevin Durant decides to go off, and they stay with single coverage on Kevin Durant. It's absolutely crazy. The guy had 31 points in the second half. How do you let that happen?
20 in the fourth quarter. I mean, not only just the third quarter. I mean, you had a 17-point lead with 19 minutes left in the game.
Yep. That's crazy.
Pathetic.
And you end up getting outscored 57-34. I mean, it's like, I mean, this is one of those ones. Like, I mean, you mentioned the
Bucks
fans.
I don't think you ever recover from that.
like Bucks players, man. I mean, just emotionally, the toll that game takes on you.
Rico, you usually got to pay to see a choke job like that, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Look at the roles are reversed here. All sorts of confusing on a Wednesday.
You know what I should have known? You know, Dave, you know what I should have known that KD was going to come through like this? Anyone that has the confidence to go on a date with somebody and bring their side piece with them, just in case the date doesn't work out.
That's
right?
Impressive.
How about that, huh?
That's impressive.
Who are
That's
you?
Supreme confidence.
Why do I got to talk to you?
You know what else, Rico? Anytime 90% of the money comes in on a team in Vegas, you probably should bet the other way.
That's honestly 90% why. 90% of the money on the Bucks last night?
Yes, over 90%
of the money.
And those
people, they were probably spending it, right? They were probably like, well, what am I going to buy with this money?
Yeah.
That's honestly why I picked the Nets yesterday, was because it always ends up like that way. Everyone jumps on the bandwagon. Okay, the Bucks are going to definitely win this game.
You did well with your pick. I mean, you didn't hit the spread on the nose like some of us did, but you did well. I mean, you picked
Look
the right
you,
game.
Look at you, Dave. Look at you.
That's right.
Doing a little peacocking.
Of course he does, because this is what he does. Like, God forbid we pat ourselves on the back. And it's Wednesday, too. Yeah, see, we should have seen it coming. It's Stump Rothenberg Day.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
This is when he's at his finest.
It's all about Dave Rothenberg.
If he was flexible, we know exactly what he'd be doing right now.
I actually didn't get it right. RJ's telling me, now this could be wrong because it's RJ and we don't know when he's right or not, but Chris picked Milwaukee 110-98. I picked the Nets 96-91. Rick picks the Nets 101-98. So I thought I picked him 97-91. It's 96-91. So I was off by the one point.
Yeah, but I had the more points, so we lean towards me winning, I think.
No, I think you and I tie.
Okay, that's fine. I'll take it.
Yeah. If I had hit the 6-point spread, I think I would have won, but I think we tie.
I have so much knowledge.
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
It's amazing to me, though, how maniacal I become when something like that is involved. Like,
I don't
making
understand
a pick.
Why.
Dude, it bothered me for the whole day. Like, all I could think about after the show was that the right number? Should I have?
I mean, you don't think that there's something odd about the fact that you, like, with 30 seconds to go in the show, we go around and make our picks for that game, and that eats you up all day long?
I want to be right so bad. I don't know why it's so important to me, but I want to be right so bad. And then
I
stressed out the whole day, and then I'm flipping through channels and I'm watching a bunch of things, and I flip on to Coward, and he's like, it's an opinion business. Doesn't matter. I'm wrong all the time.
Yeah.
Nobody
so
cares.
This is a guy with a national platform who's wrong all the time, and it bothers him not at all. You make a prediction. Nobody cares except for you, and then you come back, and the rest of the day, it haunts you and completely changes the complexion of your day.
No, not even. Like my wife gets sick of it because I'm like asking her questions. Like, you think that was the right pick? She's like, how would I know if that's the right pick?
It's a pick. Nobody knows. That's
so
why
funny.
You're making a guess at what's going to happen.
Because in that moment, I'm so stressed out. When he comes on, he's like, yeah, it's an opinion business. You make predictions. I'm wrong all the time. No big deal. Nobody cares.
Me. I don't care. Still getting paid. What's the difference? Beautiful family. I don't care. And you're like, oh,
guys,
God.
You guys making
the Nets are going to lose. I'm going to look like such a fool. Nobody would even have remembered.
You guys making like $7 million bucks a year.
Yeah. I don't care. I don't even know who the players are on the Bucks. It doesn't make a difference.
I'm sitting here getting the trust the speakers after every show.
Yeah, TTS, baby. God. Calvin in Jersey. Good morning, Cal. Wait, trust the speakers.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Hello? Cal. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying great win for the Nets. Great win for KD. I knew he had it in him. All the whole time. That's why I was so pissed when he left OKC to go to Golden State. He could have probably went anywhere else and did the same thing. You don't get beat up by a bully your whole life and then join a team. That's the only reason people gave him grief about going to OKC. Golden State. But big win for the Nets. But he's still not a Nick. That's it.
Yes, correct. He's not a Nick.
No, Knicks fans won't get over this. We won't. I mean, especially if they go on to win a championship. I mean, he's playing at this level. They'll never.
Not at all.
No, we try to explain it.
Remember, the Knicks didn't want him because health-wise, he was never.
Yeah, we don't know if he's worth a super max contract.
Why would we pay him to sit out a year?
We're not going to give him max money, whatever it was.
No, thank you.
Yeah, how ridiculous does that take look right now?
Let's not risk it.
It looked ridiculous at the time, Chris. Yeah. It looks more ridiculous now. We said it
at the time, Dave. But hey, if you're a Knicks fan, you celebrate the fact that Julius Randle was second team All-NBA. Celebrate that. You celebrate an an unanticipated season, and you watch the Brooklyn Nets, if they're able to get past this series, probably have a good chance at winning the O'Brien Trophy.
Do you think so? Do you think if they're not healthy, if Kyrie doesn't come back and Harden is hobbled, that they can win a championship with Kevin Durant solely as the one of the three playing?
I don't think it'll be solely, though, Dave. I mean, if they're able to get past this series, they're buying themselves more time for James Harden to get healthy and to see about Kyrie Irving potentially coming back. Like, I mean, listen, the ankle thing looked bad from Kyrie, but, I mean, we don't know what's happening. I wouldn't have said that James Harden had a chance of being able to play in Game 5, and the guy played 46 minutes. So, I mean, I don't know that that those guys are going to be, you know, are going to not be available moving forward. I guess that's my whole point. Like, if you have more time, then you got a better chance of those guys being able to be some semblance of themselves. And I think even with them not being 100%, having those three guys might be enough to be able to win it.
Because, I mean, there's just no team right now that you would point to.
Yes.
There's no clear-cut favorite right now.
No, I agree with that. It's not like they have this monster opponent, but if they're not healthy, could Philly get them? I think they could. If they're not healthy, could Phoenix get them? I think they could. I don't know that they do.
It's going to come down to which team. I mean, which team you match up? I mean, which is the toughest matchup it ends up being? It's not like, I mean, you're not going up against, you know, LeBron and the Lakers.
No, there's
like,
no great team.
No.
But it's going to be like what, like, because you're right. I mean, the Sixers, if, like, Embiid looked like he wore down. I mean, the second half was awful.
Yes.
And maybe he's wearing down, the meniscus is barred and whatever. Like, he's not fully healthy. But, I mean, the way they can defend, I mean, no one, Brooklyn's not going to have an answer for Joel Embiid. So, I mean, that could be a tough matchup if the Brooklyn Nets aren't healthy. But, I don't know, there's not really one team you would point to and say, you know, I guarantee this team is going to be.
But on that same avenue, would you be shocked if Philly got them if they're not healthy?
No. I guess I wouldn't be shocked about it, Dave. But, I mean, if you're a Brooklyn Nets fan, the thing that you're hoping for is for that Hawks series to be a seven-game series, and you want your guys to go up to Milwaukee and close it out in six. I mean, I don't know that Milwaukee's going to be interested in coming back to Brooklyn for a game seven, so this might be one of those situations where they lay down. But, I mean, if you're Brooklyn, you're just trying to give yourself as much time as you possibly can for those guys to rehab and to see if they can kind of get back into it and be contributors. Because last night, I mean, the best contribution that James Harden had, the value that he had, was just being out there on the court and being somebody that the Milwaukee Bucks had to pay attention to, and that created just enough room for Kevin Durant to do his thing. I believe that if James Harden wasn't out there, you're probably talking about a different outcome in last night's game.
Right. And if he didn't have a setback, you'd have to think that if he plays in game six or not, that he would be equally as good or if not better, right, James Harden, moving forward? You wouldn't think he's going to get worse if he's able to play.
No, I wouldn't think that he's going to get worse. I just think that this is one of those things, because it's a hamstring, it's so tricky, Dave, you don't want him to wear down and have a risk re-injury. But, I mean, it's all going to depend on how he feels about his body. Like, if he tells you he feels good, if it responds positively to playing all those minutes last night, then, I mean, I think that the Brooklyn Nets are probably going to be trending in the right direction.
It's hard to imagine, though, Dave, it's going to get any better. Like, I think he'll get better. Like, he's going
to
make, I mean, he'll make
like
more
he'll
than one
to
shot.
The way it is.
Yeah. I mean, you saw him last night. I mean, he took 10 shots, eight of them were threes. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't trust his hamstring yet, or he was just, you know, protecting himself, which you naturally do. But I don't know how, I mean, during the course of, especially with the hamstring, like how during the course of games that are this physical, you know, playing as many minutes as he plays, that hamstring's going to get, you know, all of a sudden he'll wake up one day and he's like, oh, this thing feels great.
No, but do you think he can get better as this series and postseason moves along?
I think he can shoot better. I just don't know. I mean, I don't know how much of the, you know, the James Harden you're used to seeing as far as like him, you know, breaking someone down and attacking the basket is going to be what he is.
So you expect that if he's able to go, this is within reason kind of the version of James Harden that we see?
Well, you're playing every other night. Like, I don't know how he feels this morning. I'm going to imagine
he'd be
pretty sore.
I wonder if you play him in game six.
I mean, that's, I don't know. I mean, it's how he feels today. I mean, it's going to come down to how he feels today.
Yeah.
How his body responds. It's always like in the moment, because of the adrenaline and everything else, you feel like you feel all right. It's the next day you wake up when you have an idea where you're at.
And I wonder how much them deciding to stay with him as long as they did was because they didn't want his hamstring to get cold and tighten up.
I'm sure it had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, like, just like if you keep him out there on the court, if he stays moving around, then maybe it's a safer play than to ask him to sit down a few minutes and then try to warm that thing back up. Maybe that's what they decided to do. But, I mean, I just don't understand from a coaching standpoint, if you're Milwaukee, why you allowed him to be out there knowing that he was compromised. Like, they should
attack him at least defensively.
They should have attacked James Harden a whole lot more on the offensive end. The fact that they didn't was a miss by Coach Bud.
And be real physical with him, I thought, was a misstep as well.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Maybe I'm not paying close attention, or maybe I really am. Were you as undressed the entire show as you are right now, Rick?
Yeah.
You were wearing just that shirt?
Just the shirt, yeah. Hmm. I'm sweating a little bit because this is coffee number three right now, so I'm a little over-caffeinated.
Wait, it's 6:21 in the morning and you're on your third cup of caffeine?
Yeah, well, I had probably been up since 2 o'clock in the morning,
yep.
Dave.
Yeah, so. Energy drink before I got in the machine and now third coffee.
I've done what I came to done.
I haven't had a mango in weeks.
It's because I got a mango in my mouth.
They make you
and
say
I bought so many
stuff.
Bags of it, too. I made an order. I made a purchase of like probably 20 bags.
Well, don't they think you're like a wholesaler?
It comes the same day. It's not even, I don't have the option. Like, it's not even like I next day it. And it comes with my name like in script. Like someone writes it in script on the box. It shows up the same day. It's amazing.
That is amazing.
It's so good, though. Dried mangoes.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
So good, man. It's
so why have you stopped eating the mango?
Because I was eating like a whole bag. And if you look at the amount of calories you're eating in that whole bag,
you're eating like 4,000 calories of mango.
A lot of sugar.
Yeah, a lot of sugar.
Yeah.
Not good for you.
So, I can't stop.
No. So you're one of those, once you have a taste, you're addicted now to the mango.
Yeah. Once it hits my lips, it's over.
All right. Islanders last night. Go ahead. I'll let you take the floor. I know that second goal is going to have you in a way. So go ahead. Take it. Run with it.
No, it really doesn't. I mean, them having too many men on the ice didn't really affect the play. I mean, the argument I've heard a couple different times, and I don't necessarily disagree with it, is, I mean, the Islanders' PP goal is on a play that I don't think should have been called a penalty either. I mean, point clearly gets pushed into Varley. Like, the intent wasn't to run over the goalie. I mean, he gets pushed into him. He gets called for a penalty. They end up scoring on that power play. I mean, what was even crazier is that Varley got them, and the spotter pulls him out of the game to go into the quiet room for concussion protocol. And then, I would have been hiding under the bench if that happened. And then throw Sorokin in, and he actually did it. I mean, he did a hell of a job jumping
in
like
that. Yeah, he was good.
In that kind of situation. I mean, that the Vasilevsky save at the end of the second period on Beauvillier was humongous.
Oh, my God.
It was
like 7 seconds left in the second. What a save that was, huh?
It was huge. I mean, that would change everything. Islanders are playing with fire. I mean, you start taking that many penalties, you keep putting them on the power play. At some point, they're going to score, which they did. They finally got production from their blue line. I mean, that's their first two goals this postseason from their blue line, which for them is huge because, I mean, last postseason, their defensemen were huge parts of it. You saw a better – I mean, I told you that. That was as good as the Islanders played.
But
they
knew you were going to get a better version of Tampa. They're too good to play like they did in game one.
It was a mix of both. Like, I gave the Islanders full credit for playing as well as they played in game one, but that was also, you know, not the Tampa team that we're used to seeing. Like, that first line with Kucherov, Point, and Palat, I mean, they had three shots on net that whole first game. And they came to play last night. They did. I mean, they were factors in that game. Point scores again. I mean, Kucherov, what a pass. Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
back up the strong
is
side.
Unbelievable, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's awesome. He's so dynamic. Couple turnovers ended up costing you. But, I mean, the physicality was there. Listen, Tampa does not lose back-to-back games. They don't. I mean, it's, you know, in the postseason, the last two postseasons, they're 10-0 after a loss. So you expect them. I mean, they're gonna bounce back, and that's exactly what they did. And
you did what you had to do. You
we done what we came to done. It's exactly right.
You showed you can compete. Like, I don't think Tampa looked like considerably the better team. You win game one, you steal home ice away right away. You played competitively in game two. They raise the level of your game. We have a series, is what we have. We have two. I think somewhat evenly matched teams, and I think we're going to have a very long series here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it feels. That's absolutely the way it feels. I mean, you got they're two really well put together teams, and you know, you look for what I think could be the difference in the series is the Islanders' ability to wear this team down. Because I mean, the Islanders don't have to wake up one morning and decide, okay, we're going to go out and play physical, we're going to finish every check and everything else. That's who they are. That's the kind of team they are. Like, you saw Tampa make an effort. Like, they decided to go into that game like, okay, we're going to try to match the Islanders' physicality. Maroon was mixing it up. Like, they were.
Oh, yeah.
They made
an
effort
game
to do that. The Islanders don't have to make an effort to do that. That's who they are.
Yeah, right. That's their game.
So, I mean, we'll see how it plays out. I mean, this is a really good Tampa team on the road, too. So, I mean, I know the Coliseum's going to be rocking. I don't understand why we have to have 8 o'clock games. I mean, I think it's just ridiculous.
It's horrible.
I didn't sleep. You can't. How do you sleep? If you're watching all this stuff, you can't sleep.
You can't. You can't go to sleep. I mean, it was like a dinner last night. You have the appetizer. You have the Mets and the Yankees, a nice appetizer. Then you have the Islanders at 8 o'clock. Then you have the main course, which is Milwaukee and the Nets. I mean, you can't get to bed till well after 11 o'clock. And then you're probably all wound up, right? A lot of people, I'm sure, can't just put their head on the pillow and go to sleep after that kind of exciting night of sports. So, I don't know. I think you just have to punt on sleep now and realize that over the summer, maybe there'll be a couple of slow moments and you can catch up then. I like to nap.
You never catch up on sleep, Dave, but I got to say this. Last night, it's not like you didn't get the payoff for staying up and watching the games.
Yeah, you really did.
Like, they were all good games. I mean, the Yankees game was a good game, came down to the end. I mean, you saw what the Mets did yesterday. And then, of course, the Brooklyn Nets being able to do what they did with that comeback in the second half. Like, I mean, it was all worth it for you. And even though you don't feel good about the Isles dropping that game last night to Tampa, like you guys already mentioned, you stole home ice and now you're coming back to the island and you feel good about the situation that you're in going into game three.
Yeah, but of all the teams, I mean, that was the one I wanted the most.
Well, oh, yeah,
game. I mean, that's the one I want the most.
Even more than the Nets, who you picked to win?
No, that's nice. I mean, listen, on the list of things that I wanted, me winning, you know, me getting that pick right was huge. But
no,
I mean,
come on. That had to be last. There's no way you didn't want the Islanders 1, the Mets 2, and the Nets winning 3.
I would go Islanders 1.
If you don't go Mets 2, you are unbelievable.
I would go me being right 2 and Mets close 3rd.
You know what? I'm done.
The Mets are in first place. They can afford
to
drop
one. So because you have this just desperation to be right with everything you say, that trumps the Mets beating the Cubs?
Last night it did, yeah.
I give up. Like no help can go out there for you. People think I'm helpless. You are helpless.
How many times do I need to explain to you? I have issues. I mean, it's just real issues we're talking about.
So
here.
Lugo's on the mound, first and second, two outs. Ninth inning, and if I would have said to you at that moment, would you prefer Lugo to get out of this or the Nets to win? You'd say, I want the Nets to win.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, probably.
All right, fine. Barry Trotz. I don't know what to say. If you pick the Bills to beat the Jets 31-13, you root for the Bills to win that game?
No. No, that's one of the ones. The only reason I picked the Bills is because if I win, great, but if I lose, better. You know what I mean? Like, that's a, like you do. Like, it's a win-win. Like, if ever I pick against the Jets when we do our NFL picks, it's strictly because it's an I can't lose situation.
Or because you just don't think the Jets have a chance of winning.
Exactly. Yeah.
But if it's one of the players, that too.
Has been the case more often than not. Yeah. Here is Barry Trotz, who is just phenomenal. How upset he was with the goal that Tampa got with too many men on the ice.
Obviously, the second goal, that one hurt quite a bit because now if they get the third one, there's a little bit more separation. So, and obviously, you guys know there's too many men on the ice there. They had 7 guys. So, disappointed at that. But we tried to battle through that. I thought we had a little push after that.
Why can you not review that, Rick? I mean, it's easy to figure out. It doesn't take a long time.
It's not a reviewable play.
No, and I understand it's not, but why?
I don't know. I mean, I can't answer that question. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you obviously, Barry saw it, so it would have been something that he reviewed. Like, I don't know why that's not reviewable and offsides is reviewable. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, it is.
But that's not the reason they scored the goal. I mean, I understand it. He's pissed because that should have been called. Like, you missed it. Like, there's a reason. Like, the ice is small enough. And we got, we got 4 officials. We got 2 referees and 2 linesmen. We don't really need that many. But if we're going to have that many, like, at least someone should see it because it was blatant. But, I mean, that's, it's what the Islanders did really well in the first game was, I mean, for Tampa to get any speed through the neutral zone or chances off the rush, it was virtually impossible. Like, they weren't able to do it. Like, last night, that changed a little bit. They had speed through the neutral zone. It was a stretch play where, you saw how dynamic Kucherov is. But, I mean, Now all of a sudden you got Letty and Barzell standing, like, attacking Kucherov. And Palat comes, you know, screaming down the middle of the ice by himself. And, you know, he's wide open, makes a, you know, perfect shot off the post. But, I mean, you can say the same thing about, I'm sure Tampa is saying the same thing about that point penalty that was called, where he gets cross-checked in the back and goes into the goalie. That the Islanders scored on that. I mean, the Islanders end up scoring on that power
play. And it was a bad call.
You're right.
So, listen, I mean, that's it happens.
You hate to blame officials, right?
But no, I actually enjoy blaming officials. It makes me feel good.
Well, because you usually tell me they place blame somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, they usually tell me to F off, but that's fine. I just don't know how many people are paying to see the referees ref.
Zero.
Zero.
Yeah. Grand total. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Chris, down 5-2 after that Dante Bichette two-run single. By the way,
Dante, huh?
Bo, sorry. That's not a terrible mistake. Come on. That's not a horrible mistake.
I mean, that's not terrible. I mean, it's his dad.
Okay. But it's not like I said Steve Bichette. I mean, I wasn't completely off base.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine.
All right, that's fine. You call it out. Anyhow.
I like to be accurate.
How about the camera work on that play? Were you guys, like, locked in on that game?
I was going back and forth. With
the whole
Mets
visual,
game.
Though, of that game.
Yeah.
Like, what? It just doesn't. I mean, on TV, it doesn't seem like you're watching a Major League Baseball game.
No, it seems like a spring training game.
Yes. 100% does. But on that play specifically, I don't know if you guys noticed, they kept the camera on Montgomery, and they never showed the baseball. And then you see with his reaction of you know, being upset that obviously it was a base hit and two runs scored. But, Chris, down 5-2. How upset were you with the Yankees? Because I'm sure you had the feeling of we're going to lose this game again.
Well, yeah, Dave, just because you don't know whether or not the offense is going to be able to come through. And you had the solo home runs early by Sanchez and Chris Gittens, but you didn't know if the Yankees offense was going to be able to have that moment. And last night, you got to give credit where credit is due. We've been criticizing the bottom of the order for the Yankees, and last night it was all about them. I mean, you were able to string together some hits in the six. You had the base hit by Urshela to get things started, and then you had the Sanchez double, and then Andujar on a little grounder scores a run, and then you have Brett Gardner be able to come through for you with a home run in the seventh inning. And then in that eighth inning, Aaron Boone pushed the right buttons. I mean, he had Tyler Wade pinch run for Andujar, and he pinch hit for Gardner with Clint Frazier, and both of those moves seemed to work out because it ended up getting you a run in that spot. And giving you an opportunity to take control of that game. So, I mean, I just feel like with everything that happened last night, I was worried about it, Dave. But then after that sixth inning, you thought, okay, if we can just get within striking distance and come up with a few hits, we're going to be able to come through. The other unsung hero last night's game, the bullpen, because you were able to get 11 outs from those guys. They didn't give up a run. That was huge, too.
Yeah, it was a little dicey, though, with Britton there. I mean, it got dicey.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was bases loaded, right? Bases loaded.
And it was 3-1.
Yeah, with Bichette.
With Dante.
Dante's Inferno. All 57 years old of him. Must be
after
backwards.
That Dante Bichette two-run single. Dante, huh?
I can't even. Seriously, I can't even. There's stuff that you guys will say on a Monday. And on Wednesday, I'm like, hey, did we repurpose that? Do we have it? Oh, no, we didn't get around to cutting the audio yet. I said it 90 seconds ago, and it's already ready to play?
After that Dante Bichette two-run single. Dante, huh?
Yeah, by the way, too. No, here's the thing, though. This is because we're nice to the guys behind
us. Oh, yeah, great. You guys are the best.
Chris and I don't air them
out
on a regular basis. Here's another thing, though. I mean, you don't want to tell Chris and I and everyone else on the show that your whole... you know, podcast situation where you're trying to take over the world, that not only is it available wherever you buy your podcast, you can see it. It's, I mean, there's obviously a beautiful set. You got hair, makeup, and everything else.
Right.
There's a live studio audience.
Now, here's the thing. You're going to believe RJ Santillo, or you're going to think that maybe I was messing with RJ Santillo and you just bought into it, hook, line, and sinker.
Well, I mean, this is a crossroads for me because I want to believe RJ.
Mm-hmm.
But after last week's performance, I'm having a hard time. So now I'm leaning towards maybe you were messing with him.
Of course I was messing with him. A lot in a pandemic, you think we have a live studio audience?
Come on, RJ.
Come on, RJ.
So that, well, that's just an outright lie, though, because...
Well, because, no, you brought it upon yourself. I'm talking to RJ, and he goes, so, is there a live studio audience? And he says it tongue-in-cheek. I said, oh, yeah. He goes, wait a minute, there's a live studio audience? How many people watch this thing?
Well, I'm not on the Zoom. How would I know? I'm just talking to you. I'm trusting you, and you misguided me. So, unlike when I got a stat wrong, that was an outright lie, and you took advantage of a friend, so...
You should have heard him, too. He's like, who would pay for this? He charges people $20. Yeah. Like, who would pay for this thing?
He goes, you charge? I said, yeah, $20. I said, we have to defray
some
of the costs.
You're such a liar.
See, we were going to have a show outing, and you didn't even know about this. We were going to surprise you, but now it's not even possible. We would have went to your undisclosed location with no fake tickets.
A live studio audience? Well, no. I mean, come on, RJ. Now I know exactly who you are. Like, I tell you anything, and you just run back to Rick. And, Rick, can you believe this? 20 people watch the podcast, charges $20 a shot.
I was Googling tickets. Me and RJ, we were going to go. Was I going to boo you during the show? Yeah, I was going to boo you, but...
Great.
RJ, you know what? We should have realized that he was messing with you. Like, I listened to the teaser. Do we have it? Of Untucked? I mean, who's paying $20 to go watch this live? Seriously.
How dare you?
Do you recognize what we're really witnessing right now? Follow along if you can. I heard this as well. This is incredible. Jacob DeGrom has allowed 4 earned runs. So just, I like you to digest it, right? Take it like a good piece of steak. Jacob DeGrom, 9 starts, has allowed 4 earned runs. Oh, wow, that's pretty good, right? Guess how many RBIs he has? 3. Listen to some of the stats that I have in front of me. This is courtesy of Jeff Passan. DeGrom, 9 starts this season, 58 innings pitched, 25 hits allowed, 8 walks. So he's allowed 33 runners combined with hits and walks, right? 93 strikeouts in 58 innings. 3 home runs allowed.
I don't understand how this is funny. I'm giving brilliant statistical information. You're hysterical, and Chris is barely cracking a smile.
And welcome aboard.
That I think is funny. Me breaking down DeGrom's numbers, not funny.
Breaking down what? You just read Jeff Passan's Twitter account is what you did. Come watch a live reading of Jeff Passan's Twitter account. As for 25 minutes, I will read stats.
Here's what it is.
And welcome aboard.
You're jealous.
Hi, I'm Dave Elias Rothenberg, and I will read the stats.
Wait. I love watching this team. All right, you know what? I'm done. I don't think we're doing stuff Rothenberg today. In fact, I think I might be done on the day. Because you're a bully. You're a bad guy. You're a K-apologist, and anybody else that gets in your way, you'll run them over.
Why would you use that as the teaser? Like, if I don't know anything about the Dave Rothenberg Untucked, and I know of Dave Rothenberg, a fanatical fan, and you're giving me... Listen to me read stats from Jeff Passan.
All right, first of all,
with
I don't think it's bad, okay? That's for starters. First of all, I don't think it's bad. Second of all, do you understand how many people are watching this? We're talking about 15, 20,000 people per episode are ingesting this. And second of all, I don't do the teaser. I'm the talent. I go in there. All right? I go in there.
That's a drop.
I have a gown thrown on me. It's like a pit crew. I have women come out from the side, and my hair is done, my makeup, my beard. They check my everything going on. All right,
temperature?
Temperature? Not yet. We haven't gone there.
I am the thermometer boy right now.
They get the studio audience in place, in proper place, and then we start. We run with the podcast. Trust the speakers.
You got the fine print on your ticket when you buy for the studio audience. Please be advised that you should bring your old lubricant for your temperature check.
I'm the talent. Look at that. I mean, these guys have never turned around sound quicker than they have today. I'm the talent.
So adamant about it.
I question the production company then, if that's what they're using for teasers. They got to have better than that.
Early risers will get work.
With the X-Files music behind you, I mean, there's better than that. Like, I want to see a meltdown. Like, give me the part of the podcast that's a meltdown.
Oh, there's meltdowns, baby.
Or, like, excitement.
And now look at this obese man that's going to sit in the chair. That's what you want. You want your own podcast, don't you?
No.
You want
he
it.
He has podcast envy, Dave. That's what it is.
That's what this
comes down to. The fact that he doesn't have a production team behind him, the fact that he doesn't have a live studio audience when he's taping, that's what it is.
They said that they would offer Nana DiPietro and your mom their own podcast.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that to the people that do the podcast. Like, I could the crew, I couldn't subject that to them. Subject them to that. I couldn't.
What?
It would be too much. It's too much for me to handle. Like, to mediate that myself is
too... But it would be entertaining.
Yeah, but it's... I don't think we're at that point. I mean, Nana's... I don't think she's up for it.
No?
Nah, back in her heyday, especially if we had Bobby around, who was her boyfriend, like her manservant, like that. Now you're talking, because that's, I mean, verbal berating at its finest.
Well, that would be very entertaining, having a woman in her like late 80s, early 90s berating a boyfriend.
Yeah, an older boy. Well, yeah, but that's just mixed in. Like, that's another element to it. And then you bring in Cheryl / Mickey Rourke, and then she's mixing it up. I'm telling you, we missed our opportunity. The whole thing would have been, I mean, the height of reality television. You throw some cameras in there. She's throwing furniture down the stairs.
I offered it to you, and you said no. So here's the thing.
Just now you did, though.
No.
It's too late now.
No, Chris, did I not offer him a podcast weeks ago? Probably months ago.
I'm saying years, though.
That happened. That actually
a month
happened.
Ago.
Dave Rothenberg stepped in, and he said the production team is ready to do something with Rick DiPietro and family, might I add.
And you said, let me think about it, and then nothing from you.
Yeah.
So you don't get offered, you freak out. You get offered, you never accept. There's no happy medium. You're never happy unless your pick is actually right.
Which makes me happy today, but I'm just telling you that I ran it by Ginny and Mickey, and it was just, it's not the right time.
When
I'm
would
saying
be the right
years.
Time?
I was saying years in the past was the right time to do it.
Well, this is when we're offering it, and you, of course, say no.
Because I can't say yes. I'd like to say
fine.
Yes.
That's fine. Can we spend a minute on the Mets before we get into Stump Rothenberg?
I could have Nana read the phone book like you just did.
That'd be great. Smith, John, 717-597.
We used to call when we figured out conference call. We used to call my grandmother, and then Pete would have.
Everyone did that. You'd call two people at the same time, and you'd have them pick up at the same time, and then they would have the conversations.
I used to love that. It was.
Did you call me? No. Did you call me? No.
What? Yeah. And then they ended up having a great conversation.
And then you would hope that they would spill something. Like, can you believe Rick? What a vile, filthy animal he is.
Dude, did I ever tell you this? Did I ever tell you the story that we were at Pete's house and his grandma? So Pete had a two family. So Pete and his
Pete
you know,
had
parents
two families.
No, they had a two family house.
Oh, okay.
So his grandmother, I mean, his mom's mom owned the house. So they lived. Peter and his family lived on the top floor, and his grandmother was on the first floor, and she was hysterical. But at one point, we're playing basketball in his backyard, and it's like just kind of like getting dusk. So the porch light comes on. She comes rolling out.
Wait, is this good? You're gonna tell us she came out naked, right?
No, pretty much. Yeah, she came out. What makes this there's two parts of the story that are funny. She comes out and she stands directly under the light, and she has her nightie on, and you could see completely through the nightie. So obviously we know what's under the nightie, and she's holding in her hand. She goes, "You guys thirsty? You want some lemonade?" She thinks it's like just legitimate.
Alcohol. You've
it
told
was Mike's
this story.
It was
like
Mike's hard
times.
Lemonade.
Yep, we've heard it. Big Mar is very angry at you, by the way.
For what?
He says, "Where is he supposed to get his stats and information from? Does Rick do his own math and create his own stats?"
I'm not saying
he gets them from other sources. Sadly, all jokes aside, it seems like your friend is just a hater. Cut the grass and the snakes will show. That's Big Mars.
Wow.
Yeah.
Big Mars can suck it. Yo, time out. Because Big Mars can suck it. He wasn't listening. I appreciate the stats. They're great stats. And you're going to get your stuff. I'm going on Elias. I ain't doing my own stats. I'm going to get them from somewhere else. I don't spend the first 10 minutes of the show just reading stats.
That wasn't the first 10 minutes of the show. That was
it
probably
was
the
teaser clip.
The show.
You
so
just
your
gave a
issue
teaser
is
clip.
With the person creating the actual tease, not with me incorporating those stats into the show.
Well, so you got to have some say.
I'll get Rich on. You want me to get the producer on?
Yeah, get him on. You retweeted it. I would have been pissed if I saw that. That's not a representation of what you do.
I didn't even look at it. He said retweet this, and I retweeted it.
He should be fired today.
Really?
Him on the phone. I would fire him today.
I'm going to text him. I'm going to try to get Rich on. He can promote the podcast, and you can berate him as what you do with everyone. You're a big bully. Unless your name is Michael K., you are just a big, giant bully is what you are.
But there's no way that Michael K. is doing something like that. Michael K. is going to have, you know, some Joe Schmo just to put
not
a teaser out.
Not Joe Schmo.
That,
he's
that,
an Emmy-winning producer.
Hey, for what?
Guy does Yankees Magazine on the Yes Network.
Oh, my God. Yankees Magazine. Like Lifetime movies he probably does. I mean, that's like.
Nets Magazine.
It's like the Melatonin podcast.
I
got to
be honest. I got to think the offer for Nana and your mom is probably off the table at this point.
That's fine.
I don't think that they're.
I wouldn't subject them to that.
Don't think so. Don't think they could handle it.
Watch Nana look through the TV guide. Come on, that's you're better than that. You know it.
All right. You know what? I'm ignoring you at this point. And I'm thinking that if Santiago gives you a star, then you guys are in cahoots here. Santi, let's get started.
He's
confident.
I have so much knowledge.
He's arrogant.
I'm a big star, you know.
He's unstable.
I'm crazy.
He's Dave Rothenberg.
You don't think I'm smart?
And now it's time to see if you can stump Rothenberg.
Stump Rothenberg brought to you by BetMGM Sports. And away we go. 800-919-3776. We start with how we always start, and that is Andy from Merritt. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. What's up, Drive Time?
What's up, Andy? Your Islanders looking good last night, baby. Real good.
And I'm the bully. And I'm the bad guy.
It's not. I'm stating the obvious.
David, it's tough to win when they have seven skaters on the ice. Nonetheless, David, see if you can answer this one.
All right.
The Conn Smythe Trophy is awarded annually to the MVP of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Only one player has won the trophy three times. Name him.
You don't have any hockey stats lying around that you're going to read in your next Untucked podcast?
You know, can I think for a minute? I know Lemieux won it back-to-back.
And welcome aboard.
Did Gretzky win? How about Messier? No, Messier didn't win with the Rangers in 94. This might have to go. Do you know the answer to this?
Yes. Yes, of course I know the answer to this.
Of course you do. Of course you do. Is it Crosby? I don't think it's Sidney Crosby.
After that Dante Bichette two-run single.
God
Dante,
sakes,
huh?
Would you stop it? Repulsive. I don't. Only one has won three times, huh?
That's correct.
Perrant won back-to-back, I know. I think he won 74-75. I'm going to say, is it Bobby Orr? Oh, God.
We need a final answer, Dave. Time integrity here.
I don't think I have the answer. I'm going to... Lemieux, I know, won twice. Gretzky won twice.
Somebody I would look up. Somebody I would look up to. Come on.
Is it goalie?
Yeah.
Patrick Waugh.
We'll give you half credit there because 39 took you through.
What do you mean half credit? I get credit, no?
No, that's full credit. That's good. I mean,
yeah, that's full
picked.
Credit right there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You could have picked them, and there's plenty of goalies.
Yeah.
I could have gone with Marty Brodeur. I went with Patrick Waugh. All right, Rick, you're up. Go ahead.
All right, here we go. David, tell me the only person to be drafted into four different professional leagues.
Oh, this is a layup.
Dave Winfield.
Layup.
That's too easy. That's too easy. I just thought that was interesting for people to know.
It's amazing.
I drafted MLB, ABA, NFL, NBA.
You know, he was a dominant pitcher at University of Minnesota. Dominant.
It doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, the guy, he's a freakish
athlete
at his size.
He's a big dude, too.
He's humongous.
Yeah. He's like 6'7". He's enormous.
Yeah, he is.
Enormous. All right, let's continue. Shep 2-0. This is quite the start. Shep in Hicksville. Good morning, Shep.
Good morning. A president question.
All right.
Who was the only president to appear on United States currency while he was still alive?
Only a living president to be on currency. Is it Coolidge?
Final.
Yes.
It is Coolidge.
Yes!
Nice, Dave.
That's a brilliant answer.
Nicely done.
Oh.
How did you come up with that one?
Well, I knew it wasn't Lincoln and it wasn't Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking like you know, a little deeper in the woods, and I went with Coolidge.
Whew. Very nice.
It's answers
done.
Like that really impressed me right there.
Yeah.
Let's go with Verrett in Rockland. This is college football related, I'm told, so maybe Canty can help me on this one. Go ahead, Verrett.
Hey, what's going on, Dave? So
three Heisman winners in the 80s were quarterbacks. Can you name them?
Well, in the 80s, Vinny Testaverde won the Heisman, right? Can't he?
I believe he did, Dave. Yep.
Yeah. So, Doug Flutie won the Heisman. And I believe the tough one of the three would be a guy that did it at what used to be a football factory for quarterbacks. Andre Ware.
Wow. Too easy.
Nice, David.
Look at you, Dave.
This is scalding.
Look at you.
Scalding red hot.
A Kevin Durant-esque performance on Stump Rothenberg.
Should we stop it?
Oh, good for you.
No, keep going, Dave.
Oh, God. All
let's
right.
revel in greatness.
Let's go to Will in Pearl River. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, guys. How's it going? Love the show. All right,
Thank
Dave.
You.
1938, first NFL draft. Who was the number one pick of that draft?
I believe it was a gentleman by the name of Corbett Davis.
That is incorrect.
Mm.
Jay Berwanger of the University
Berwanger.
Of Chicago.
Jay Berwanger, yes, who won the Heisman Trophy. All right. That's the 38 NFL draft?
No,
Corbett
that's
the Davis 36. Is 38. Yeah, that's the 36 draft.
Yeah, because Berwanger, I think, won the Heisman Trophy in 35.
No, 38 was... You were right with 38 was Corbett Davis.
Well, I was right.
Yeah, you were right.
38 is Corbett Davis, yes.
Yeah.
From the Cleveland Rams, right?
Yes.
Ha!
Oh.
Even when he thought you were wrong, you were right, Dave. How about
that? That is correct.
Terrible job by him.
You can end it now, Dave. You can end it now. I mean, that's just...
Isn't that repulsive, though? How can you call with a, like, that's an easy answer to look up and have the wrong answer?
That's 36. His question was for 36.
Yeah, because Berwanger won the Heisman Trophy and I thought it was 35 he won the Heisman. Was it 36?
He was drafted, and I mean, he was drafted first overall in 1936.
Yeah.
All right, are we done or do you want one more?
I didn't love that question. Let's go, I mean, I would go one more, but it's up to you.
All right, let's go to Orlando in Newark. Good morning, Orlando.
Good morning. Two players have hit for the cycle for both and against the same team. Name them.
This is a ridiculously hard question.
Yeah. So for and against the same team.
Yes.
Boy, I don't know. Guys that have hit for the cycle.
This question is almost not even fair.
I'm going to say Adrian
Beltre.
I made
one of them then. That's one of them.
Adrian Beltre is right?
Yes.
I'm going to say...
I mean, the fact that you got that is incredible.
I'm going to say... boy, I really don't know.
Is this Orlando? Let me ask you a question. Is the other one... Is it in the... Like, really way in the past? Is it... You know,
yes.
present?
Yes. 1929 and 1940.
Oh.
Joe Cronin.
Exactly right.
Come on.
That is correct.
Oh, God, I felt good. Yeah.
I don't know how.
Yeah, but I wouldn't
possible.
Have gotten that if you hadn't given me the 29 and 40.
Yeah, who cares, though? That's still impressive, Dave.
I'll take it.
Dear
Do you
God.
Realize what we just witnessed?
If you hadn't given me the 1929, I'd go, really?
Right.
It's 1929. It's not 1999 or 89 or 79. It's 1929.
I give you the year. I know you'll get it.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7. 7.